This is the Science Behind the Soldier, a podcast from the Combat Capabilities Development Command Soldier Center.
Hey, so welcome to our fourth podcast, where we bring one of our teammates in, and we kind of talk, get to know them a little bit, get to know what they do for the organization, likes and dislikes, et cetera, and what they're working on. And so today, we're lucky we have Tosh with us from AirDrop, been here about 14 years in November. So, and I'm kind of excited to talk to him. I've got a little bit of experience with jumping out of airplanes, and so this is always exciting to me. And to me, it's about safety and making sure we do the right things for our soldiers to reduce the risks that are inherent in this dangerous activity that we do. So the first thing I'm going to ask you, Tosh, is, why did you choose this career? And then also tell me a little about your background, right?
Absolutely. So good morning, sir. So I really chose this career, and it's been a good fit for me because it's a very challenging environment. Working in personal airdrop for the Army, it's really an opportunity for me to grow professionally and personally. It's really given me a lot of opportunities to do really amazing things that you really don't get an opportunity to do outside of our type of work environment. So how I got here, essentially, in undergraduate, I was studying aerospace engineering at Boston University. And right when I graduated, I had applied to a couple aerospace engineering positions across the Army, and Natick reached out to me for some interest in the personal airdrop team. And to be honest, at the time, the job sounded light years away from everything else that was on the table for me. You know, as far as, like, I could have been working on engines, satellites, rockets. Yeah. That was my background. Parachutes came out of left field, and it was so intriguing that I just had to take the opportunity. I had to just take a shot. And here I am about 14 years later.
Yeah, it's a niche field. It's small, right? I mean, there is not, if you think about the just in the civilian side of parachutes, right? It's not a large activity across the United States, right?
Absolutely.
And then within the Army, it's actually extremely small, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you didn't go into some other aviation aspect, but you ended up with parachutes. So awesome. And so I guess, so talk a little bit about, after you've decided to come here, you know, how that transition from college into the government workforce, and then, you know, kind of that stepping stone to where you are today, you know, through that.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I joined, I actually didn't know much at all about the Army. Coming from a purely civilian background, I didn't really have any family that was involved in the service.
Did you grow up around this area, or?
I grew up in South Florida, actually.
Really?
So I came to New England for undergraduate, and I ended up staying. My family still questions that decision to this day.
I love it.
But yeah, I've been
up here since 2006. Still back in South Florida?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's completely different, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
We got, I mean, the temperature up here a little bit different than Florida,
right?
But and it's a little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised.
Different lifestyle.
So I mean, but you decided to stay. That's awesome. All right.
Absolutely.
Well, take me through the rest of that now.
Yeah. So I joined as what used to be the ACTED's intern program back then. Now it's a career development program. So it was a progression as a GS 7, 9, 11, 12. For me to first begin as a junior engineer supporting projects, to learn what are the parachutes, what are the soldiers' mission, to understand, like, what is it we're trying to accomplish here. And that was really my introduction to the fact that, you know, this job is purely about saving lives and enabling soldiers to do what they need to do in a really challenging environment. So I started as a junior engineer working on projects, slowly took on more responsibility to start managing projects, and that eventually progressed to me taking on the role as a program lead. So I've actually been leading the development, manufacturing, testing, fielding, and training of full parachute systems now across the Defense Department. Our work that I do with the parachute systems is, you know, from an Army perspective for our requirements and our needs in the operational environment, but I actually work closely with every single service out there because we have a very strong partnership across the DoD as far as what we do. Common needs, common technical challenges. We also do work with other folks in the government, such as, you know, NASA, U.S. Forest Service. It's a really rewarding experience.
Well, I think the other services rely on our expertise, right?
Absolutely.
And the expertise that you've amassed and what everybody else in that organization has amassed over the years, right? It's like a one-stop shop for all things parachutes, right?
Absolutely.
Both personnel and cargo. We're kind of focusing on personnel today. So, all right, well, tell me a little bit what you're currently working on within the personal parachute realm.
Absolutely. So right now, I've taken on leading the development program for a capability that the Army's actually been seeking since 2002, and that's for the development of an automatic activation device for static line parachutes. And the whole point of this is that, you know, you as a soldier, as a paratrooper, you're going through a very involved mission to get on board an aircraft, put on a parachute. You're going through a lot of sequence of events, ultimately to jump out of that plane. You're taking a risk. You're doing something inherently dangerous to get down to the ground and do your actual mission. So what this capability that we're developing right now, the static line AED, which we call the SLAD, the whole point of that is to deploy your backup parachute if you find yourself in a malfunction incident where you're unable to pull your parachute, or there's just too much going on and you just haven't that situational awareness to pull your reserve.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you know, when I first heard about this, you know, just from an engineering perspective, this is a very technically challenging problem to solve because of the, you know, one, the system that you develop has to be small, right? It has to fit into the current system. It has to be able to recognize that there's an issue, right? That something didn't deploy correctly. Has to make sure that you're outside the aircraft. It has to, you know, and then it has to activate 100% reliably. And so all of those together make for a very challenging, I think, again, from a technical perspective, issues to overcome. How did you guys do that?
So the management of this project has really been a really hybrid approach where we're really looking at all the resources available to us at the Soldier Center. We're working with academia, we're working with industry, and we're working within the Defense Department to really make sure that we develop a solution that really meets the full operational need of this. And what this actually does is it builds on previous successes here at the Soldier Center. Because you may think that, you know, we're developing an electronic device that's going to deploy a parachute, but the entire footprint of that involves also modifications to the parachute design. This actually builds on the success of the T-11 Reserve single pin design that the Soldier Center developed, produced in-house, where now we have a reserve parachute container that actually can accommodate a static line AED in there. That was a success as far as addressing risks to the soldier. So now we actually have a platform for future capabilities already available to us. So now with the static line AED, we've actually been funding some folks in the industry to developing solutions for us with different approaches because we know that in this very complex environment where you have very few seconds to make that decision, you know, the fact that you're jumping out 1,000 feet and you need to deploy a reserve parachute within a few seconds because you don't have too much time, we wanted to make sure that we took any and all approaches and consider them. So we've got some partners in industry that have a certain set of approaches. While we've been funding some other solutions, such as machine learning integration, we're trying to really stay at the cutting edge to make sure that at the end of the day, the soldier gets a capability that makes their lives easier and safer.
Yeah, and it's when you mentioned the time, right, that sequence, it's so important. I think that some people who have never, you know, donned a parachute or really don't understand what you guys do or what a parachutist does, I mean, once you go out the door of that aircraft, you know, it's a six-second opening sequence for the T-11. So that means six, you count to six, your parachute should be fully deployed at that time. Well, you've already dropped significant distance. Yep. And so now you have to look at your parachute to make sure that it's the envelope's completely, you know, open and everything is not tangled. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that in like microseconds, because if it's not, you've got to then pull your reserve. And that has an activation sequence too. And all of that is consuming time, which means distance. And you only have so much. And so the ability to do that with a device, if a soldier is incapacitated, which happens in the T-11, can you talk a little bit about that? Like the difference from the T-10 to what we're seeing in terms of malfunctions in the T-11?
Absolutely. So the legacy parachute systems that were in use by the U.S. Army, the T-10 parachute, for about 50 years, you know, that reserve parachute had certain malfunction deployment characteristics where, you know, if you were going to have a malfunction, it was going to be a high-speed malfunction. And, you know, you didn't have as much decision time, and the reliability of the reserve parachute maybe wasn't as there to address low-speed and high-speed malfunctions. Right. What we achieved with the T-11 reserve capability is that the parachute can deploy in pretty much any condition you'll find yourself in, a low-speed or high-speed malfunction. It has the ability to get out there in the clean air, inflate itself. But it's the success of that T-11 reserve still relies on you to deploy that reserve parachute. And that's exactly what we're targeting now. is that now we have a capability as far as the parachute is better. We don't have certain types of malfunctions anymore that were very catastrophic. We have reduced those down to almost negligible percentage. Right. The soldier is now safer inherently if the parachute is deployed. Now we're targeting that last slice of the pie to make sure that the reserve is out there when it's needed.
Right, and we're talking about, you know, soldier exits the aircraft, but there's some potential he's entangled.
Absolutely.
In the riser or something, and he can't even deploy his parachute, I mean his reserve.
Yes.
And so this would take over for that and
yes.
then deploy the reserve in an effective manner, lowering him to the ground safely, right?
Absolutely. So. And the safety increases that we've achieved with the T-11 parachute system, the T-11 reserve parachute system, it's gone a long way as far as enabling the soldier, the airborne commanders to have that flexibility to do better mission planning, to be better ready for whatever the mission entails. And what we see as a static line AED capability is really just giving that airborne commander and the soldier just more flexibility, more safety, so they can do their mission.
Right. And so where are we in that program's life cycle?
Right now on the static line AED, we are actually in source selection, where we are actually doing a formal comparison of all the solutions that are out there, potential candidates. So we've put out a solicitation to the industry and academia to provide us with potential solutions that they would like to propose for this capability. We have validated requirements from the U.S. Army Combat Developer, the Maneuver Combat Developer Integration Directorate. So we are actually on the verge of awarding some contracts, and we're going to go into a very heavy test campaign where we're going to be doing a lot of airdrop testing. We're going to bring in all the stakeholders across the Air Force, the maintainers and operators, to make sure that they get hands-on with all these solutions and better understand what is in the realm of the possible.
Sure. And eventually we'll down select.
Absolutely.
And get into production and it'll be in the force. So now that's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's going to change the fatality rate and the injury rate that we have right now for airborne soldiers. So we thank you for that. All right, let's switch a little bit here. I want to talk about, your work environment. You don't just work in a building, right? You have opportunities to go to the field. But so just kind of talk about, you know, the space, the environment, kind of what you're, the life cycle of your work is in the environment that you have to work within.
So what I'd say is this is one of the hidden gems of this career, is that the work environment is not behind a desk.
Right.
I am out there on the drop zone. I am interacting with soldiers face-to-face on the drop zone as they are, you know, coming down from
sure.
C-130s. I'm in the aircraft.
That's
I'm
what I was
going
to ask you that. Do you get a chance to get into the aircraft?
Absolutely.
Get on the ramp. That's exciting, right?
I've done a tandem jump at the Military Freefall School in Yuma, Arizona. I've actually gotten trained in powered paragliding. So I do find myself at the forefront of getting the hands-on, getting the dirt under the fingernails, to really see what is this product all about and what do the users really need.
And the soldiers appreciate that.
Absolutely.
They
really strong personal relationships over the years. It's one of the best parts of this job is that, aside from the professional achievements that I've had, is that I formed really strong working and personal relationships across the country. This job really exposed me to people that I probably never would have run into
absolutely.
Just day to day.
And it's amazing, you know, I mean, having dealt with soldiers for a long career, but when you see, first of all, they volunteer, right, to protect our nation. They volunteer to jump out of an aircraft. And, you know, when they get to meet someone like you who has their safety in mind, I mean, you can see the appreciation level and the energy that they bring. It's kind of rewarding, right? And you
Absolutely.
Know from your self-perspective that you're helping them achieve something. You don't get that in every career.
Absolutely, right. Sir. And I'd say, like, the rewarding part about this is the fact that, like, everybody that we work with has the same goal in mind. It's really about success for the soldier.
Yep.
It really makes it easier to take on these challenges because I know that I've got the support of a lot of really dedicated folks behind me.
Yeah, I would say that the airborne community is unique within itself. Right? Within the Army, it's this very unique community that is very focused on making sure that they do the right thing for soldiers all the time from a safety perspective. I mean, the whole Army does that, but they take a very unique perspective on it. Interesting group. So I want to pull the thread on something you said earlier, right? So I want to go back to when you first started here.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that we try to do with new employees, it's not hard to sell the mission that we have. I mean, like you just said, right? We're such a diverse organization, and we do such great work, exciting work, that you don't get somewhere else, right? You're not going to get that working for other firms. And so, but it's a high cost of living area.
Absolutely.
And so how did that get into your decision process or did it? Like when you graduated college, you had this job, you came in as probably a seven?
Yes.
And so, you know, even back then, 14 years ago, Boston was still an extremely expensive place to live. It's probably worse today. So what do you say to those younger people that are in that period of coming from college, thinking about working here, but looking at, you know, New England as an expensive place?
Yeah, I'd say that New England is definitely an expensive place, and it was a challenge, I'll admit, when I was a GS7. But, you know, what it really boiled down to is the opportunities that are available with this career path that really made it all worth it. Because not only was it communicated to me early and often once I joined the workforce here at the Soldier Center, but it's in action. I see it in action all the time, is that we invest in our people to grow them. And that was a huge, huge benefit to this career. So, yes, the cost of living was higher, but I knew that I had more potential here, you know, with the Soldier Center. It definitely made it all worthwhile. And especially to know that I have the flexibility, not just to, if I ever wanted to, just take an airdrop. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities across the portfolio as well.
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, and, you know, when I always try to, when, you know, you start off, there's a growth, right? And things will get better. But the opportunities you have here, you probably won't get other places.
So. Absolutely.
Well, look, anything else you want to hit me on before I kind of close out?
No, what I'd just like to highlight is that, you know, as part of, like, understanding what it took for me to get to my career spot, I am doing a lot of outreach right now with folks in academia. I've actually am starting my second year running a capstone project at Northeastern University. And that really is intended to really ignite some interest in our portfolio and get folks to understand that we are out here, you know, to understand that there is a lot of opportunities here at the Soldier Center. So
yeah, and we've had, you know, we've had some loss in personnel that have been around for a long time. I met John and obviously left with years of experience. It's hard to fill those shoes. And so it's important to get people in and mentor them along to make sure they understand what we're doing and build that educational level and that experience level up. Because it is, again, this is not a skill that is inherently within the civilian population, right?
Absolutely. And one thing I want to highlight, sir, is that right now it's a very opportune environment for us in the sense that there's a lot of interest and momentum for the Army to modernize. We are really doing really important things right now. And because this is a time for like folks to strike while the iron is hot, we want to get that talent in. We want to make sure that folks understand, you know, what we can achieve here.
Yeah, and I think from an airborne community perspective, right, we are looking at many different things, right? Not just safety, but potentially a new parachute.
Absolutely.
To replace the T-11. And then, you know, looking at joint operations with other countries' aircraft, making sure we can jump out of those. But there was a lot of momentum, I think you're right, in this community that probably was stagnant for a little bit.
Yes, sir.
So, anyway, say, look, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to me. But more importantly, I want to thank you for what you've done for soldiers because every little bit helps. It makes our Army the most lethal and protective force in the world, and you are part of that. So I thank you for that.
Thank you, sir.